The Nikki Byrne Show with Jenny Green on 2FM.
Proudly sponsored by Aldi, where the meat is delivered fresh every day, the Aldi way.
Packing up and going to every country in the world. Imagine doing that. Well, my next guest, he's joining me on the line from Oslo, is Gunnar Garfors. Good morning, Gunnar. How are you?
I'm doing great here in Oslo. It's even sunny here. Who would have thought?
Listen, I've been to Oslo many times. Love the place. It's absolutely beautiful. You have decided at one point in your life to venture out and leave Oslo behind and not only just visit some countries, but go ahead and do them all.
Absolutely. I mean, there is some. The more you travel, it's like a drug. You know, you get addicted to it, I think. You just want to do more and more and more. And at one point, you just can't stop. It's like a drug or a virus. It's a virus, a disease, but I don't want to get rid of it. I love it. It is great.
We must say, you are a journalist. So I suppose a lot of the countries that you visited at the beginning was through work, where journalists, I suppose, are hopping on a plane at a moment's notice to get to cover stories. So how many countries do you reckon you had done before you decided, do you know what, I'm actually going to do them all?
Well, I am around 85, actually, and that's then I passed all the Stan countries and the seven countries ending with Stan. And I said, I need another goal. And, well, there were only 115 or so left. And I just said, oh, why not? Let's go for it. And I'll go to all of them. And, of course, I had some quite difficult ones, visa-wise, hard to get to, travel-wise, and all the rest of it. But I think it's important to have a goal, something to, you know, look forward to. I don't know, just meeting all these people or seeing these amazing sights, it was great.
So when you were a kid, is this something that you always wanted to do? Is this something that you grew up thinking, I just want to travel? Or how did it actually, you know, come about?
Well, when I was 4 years old, my brother, who was two at the time, our mom was at home with us on the west coast of Norway. Our dad, he was a medical doctor working on a cruise ship in the Pacific. And of course, we couldn't read back then at such a young age. So he recorded on old-fashioned audio cassette tapes these fantastic tales from the Philippines, from China, from Alaska, from Canada, and sent them back to us in these envelopes. So every day, we ran down to the mailbox to pick up a cassette. Of course, they're only there like once or twice a month. And when there was a cassette, we ran back into the kitchen, put it into the player, cassette player, and just press play. And so I guess I have to credit my dad for sort of putting this into a young child's mind, you know, these dreams, this curiosity about what is on the other side of the world. Of course, we didn't really understand, you know, our mom said the world is around. For a four-year-old, that does not make much sense. So, but that means he must be standing upside down on a cruise ship. No. But anyway, he recorded these tales, and it just inspired me so much from a very early age.
What a great idea. What a great dad. He's creating that imagery for everybody, I suppose, you know, kind of marking it himself. But then for you guys at home, you know, I can only imagine what it must be like. You're sitting there and you're listening to his voice and you're thinking, wow.
Yeah, no, you know, it was, and that's exactly what it was. It was total wow moments. Of course, we had to sort of repay our dad, so we decided to record our own cassette tapes and send back to him. We didn't really have that much to tell. You know, we were at the playground where we saw a big rock. We tried to move the big rock, but we couldn't. So, you know, two very young children, you know, really telling these totally probably very uninteresting tales to him. He was experiencing all of this other stuff. In these fantastic countries far, far away.
Gunnar, is your dad still alive? Is he still about? Does he know you've completed this mammoth journey?
Yeah, no, he is. He is now 70. He's going to be 76 this summer. So he's retired. He still lives in the same village on the west coast, Naustdal. It's so far to the west. We can almost see Ireland, actually. So
That's where all our rain comes from. Comes down from you guys. All our cold weather.
Yeah. Well, you know, keep blame us. I don't mind.
So when you completed it, you decided to write a book, didn't you?
I did indeed, yeah. I named it How I Ran Out of Countries. And this came about because I experienced so many incredible tales. I met so many amazing people out there. And so towards the end, I think I had 15 or 20 countries left. I just decided I'm going to have to write this down. I'd, you know, filled in some notebooks and all the rest of it, you know, taking a lot of photographs. So I had some material, but I decided to put it all together and wrote a book with one chapter for every country out there, so 198 chapters. So that was a big task as well, but it was something I really wanted to do to inspire people. Of course, it's not a guidebook. I mean, some of these countries I haven't been in for 8 or 9 years, so I can't tell people you should go to this hotel or go to this pub. So it's more like an inspiration. It's about the people I met. It's about the places I saw. It's what I experienced. And I didn't want it to be some sort of encyclopedia either. So it's not listed alphabetically. It's listed under different themes, 21 themes. One is about food. One is about island hopping. One is about partying. One is about women and so on. So every country has one chapter under one of these themes.
Did it sell well? Did it do well for you, that book?
Well, Norway is a little country. It's sold over 2,000 copies here, and the English version has sold between 3,000 and 4,000. So it's sold much more in, of course, what is a bigger market. Mm-hmm. So this is quite good for a Norwegian book, at least. But it's I'm not like a bestseller. Yeah. I can't brag about that.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think it's more interesting for anybody to get a hold of it and kind of share that journey, I suppose, a little bit. For people listening now who would think, you know what, I'd love to do something crazy, for want of a better word, like this. Any tips for them? I mean, how did you afford to do that, for example?
Well, I don't have any. I don't have a car. I don't have any pets. I never had a CD collection. I just prioritized to travel, and I think that's key here. You need to have a goal. You need to be determined to do something. And of course, it doesn't have to be to travel to every country. Maybe you want to see like 5 cities. Maybe you want to visit 10 countries, or maybe you want to climb, 15 mountains. I don't know, or just one particular mountain. But I think it's important to have a goal. And I don't like the term bucket list. I mean, it's pretty negatively put, isn't it? It's something you do before you die, which is sort of a negative way of looking at it. And the moment you have a bucket list, or a so-called bucket list, it's sort of only to you, the only thing that matters is to cross something off. And I think then you've sort of lost the intention. You should really enjoy what you're doing, whether it's to climb a mountain or to visit a country. It shouldn't be just about crossing it off the list. So have a goal, but not necessarily a quantitative goal. It should be more quality than quantity, in my opinion.
And scary moments, though. I mean, if you've done every country in the world, all 198 of them, any scary moments? There must be moments that were a little bit like, I'm in a situation here that I'd rather not be in.
Well, there has been a few, but I guess there's been a mix of luck and experience. I guess my scariest moment was in Somalia, and I was I'd gone in there, I'd hitchhiked to get into a small village. It turned out there was no hotels there, so I just walk around, and in the end, I end up in the mayor's house. He was the only one having a house in the entire village. Mostly those lived in shacks and such, and you know, I'm being taken around by actually a journalist student there, and in the end he takes me to some sort of a coffee shack, and they serve tea, coffee, and I'm sort of thinking maybe I should try to get back out again of Somalia. There are no roads there, and one of the guys I'm talking to, having coffee with, he calls on a very old Nokia phone. He calls the guy with a car, and this is Africa, so the car is a big four-wheel drive vehicle. It's not going to drive until it's full. That's just how it works. And the worst moment ever in Africa was in Rwanda. And I was the first person to go into a 50-seater bus. And it took 6 hours before it left because they were going to fill it up. But in Somalia, this turned into a fight because I went into the shotgun seat, into the passenger seat, the best seat in the car. This young lad with a huge knife in his belt comes over, opens the door, and tries to drag me out of the car because he wants to sit in front. which I would not have minded. But the guy who'd given me this seat, you know, his name was Tony, he would have lost face if the other guy had taken this seat. So it turned out to be a big fight. Tony won it. So I ended up sitting in front, out of Somalia, into Djibouti, with the guy with a huge knife just sat behind me.
Who lost
the fight?
So I was
leaning forward. You know, that was the worst thing, worst, you know, hour of my life. You know, he could have backstabbed me literally any moment of that journey. I was terrified. But
so but Tony won the fight, though. Tony was still with you.
Tony won the fight.
And was he? You were okay, because that guy just sat behind him going, oh, well, that didn't go well. That didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Was there a problem over the through countries with language barriers and stuff like that?
Well, that's the thing. With English, you always find someone who speaks English. I mean, it might even be a 12-year-old girl, you know, that studies it in school. And if I just come about and they're only old people who don't, or young people for that matter, that don't speak English, they will then get hold of this person who speaks English, and she or he will be an interpreter. In Iran, in Mashhad, in Iran, it's a big city with a huge mosque, amazing place. We couldn't find anyone. I was there with my brother and two friends. We could not find anyone who spoke English, and we're going to go for restaurants. So I took my notepad up and I drew a sheep, a cow, and two breads, and that's what they served us. So, you know, so that's a last resort. You can always, you know, draw or use body language, and you're always going to be able to get by. Yeah. But there's one important thing, and we Norwegians are really bad at it, and it's smiling, because we're so shy that we don't typically smile to foreigners or people we don't know. And of course, it's free, and it lowers the barrier, and it shows that you're not a threat. And you know, just a smile, even if there's no common language, will get you extremely far.
Yeah, no, it is true. I've travelled a little bit myself, and I have to say, you do in certain situations. Like I think I remember one time making the noise of a cow, or maybe the noise of a chicken, to try to describe, you know, what type of food that we were trying to order. So you would advise this? I mean, would you advise it to everybody, or is something like this not for everybody?
Well, I don't think, if you've never traveled before, I don't think the first place you're going to visit is necessarily Afghanistan or Somalia. It's like with everything else in the Euro, in the football championship. I mean, if you start playing football today, you're not going to play in the European championship tomorrow.
Although you might be able to play for England if you started playing today.
Well, that's true. You know, that does take much to go, you know. Or I'll take over as a coach there, a manager. But, you know, it's like experience, isn't it? So you have to build it gradually. And I think if somebody wants to go out and travel, they should start nearby where they live, you know, even in their own city or village, or the neighbouring village or the neighbouring county, and then maybe one country nearby and so on, and sort of build your experience and build the love for travelling as well. And I think, you know, when you've done that, you can gradually move on to, let's say, more complicated or more dangerous countries. Dangerous isn't really fitting. You know, every country, you will find safer zones or you know, safe places in pretty much every country in the world. Of course, I don't recommend people to go to war zone, needless to say. But even in Syria, you can find places that are calm and not dangerous to go to.
Did you go to anywhere where you just did it like to tick the box, so to speak, as in not really spend much time there? You just got in and got out to say, right, I was in it.
I'm not a big fan of countries where people only go there. They only go there to go on the beach and they buy souvenirs and all the rest of it, like typical touristy places. So the Bahamas, I've actually only been for a day, never stayed overnight there. I think we're there for like 3 hours or something. But the thing is, and I'm going back there because I think even the Bahamas deserves a little bit more time. Yeah. And so I'm going back there as well. But I think you have to do something. You have to experience it. You have to talk to people, you know, have some food or whatever. To me, it's not enough just to go to an airport, to go to a train station or ride a bus through a country. To me, that's not enough. I must have done something in the country for it to qualify.
It really is an amazing story. Have you any memories of Ireland, by the way? Have you spent much time here?
I actually lived in Ireland. My dad, he studied at the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin. So I lived there when I was a kid. I've been back many, many times. Dublin is an amazing city. I love it. I love it to bits. And you guys, and people often ask me, so where are the friendliest people in the world? And I always then have to mention Ireland. I mean, you can go to a small village in the middle of Ireland and you go into a pub and it's like you're part of the family after 5 minutes. It's truly incredible. I particularly also love the West Coast of your country as well. I'm from the West Coast of Norway, as I said, so I guess it's a little bit similar. I love the nature there. I like the waves, you know, battering on the shore, you know, day and night, the roughness, the weather, the fresh air and all the rest of it. And it's a little bit similar to Norway in many ways.
I've actually been to Norway a few times, like I said, but Bergen, is that on the West Coast?
Yes,
I've been up there. Well, listen, Gunnar, I could talk to you all day because it really is an amazing story. When you next go on holidays, are you starting to look outside of the globe now? Are you going, okay, I want to be an astronaut now?
Well, you know, if you can find me a sponsor, I'd love to, but it's a little bit out of my league. Listen, you know, there's just one funny story. I just had this DNA test done, you know, and it shows I'm 74% Norwegian and 22% Irish.
Really?
So, you know, I thought I should mention that since I talked to you.
That's pretty incredible.
You know, that's quite incredible. Yes, I don't know, I guess some Vikings were over there.
Yes, well, that's where you get your craziness something. From. That's what it is, Gunnar. You get it from us.
It must have been.
Gunnar Gafors.
Thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it really is. 198 countries in the world you travelled to. Give us the name of your book again.
Well, it's called 198, How I Ran Out of Countries.
Brilliant. Gunnar Gafors, thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye. I've got fire.